like I said, I was always searching for male attention, always. I had no attention at home. I had no mom attention. I had no dad attention. I had nothing. And in my head, negative attention was way better than no attention because at least I was being paid attention to.
All right, story. Story, where are you from originally? Where did you grow up?
In the Southern California area towards Palm Springs. So Joshua Tree, California.
Tell me about your family growing up.
So growing up, I had my mom and my dad, but my mom was an addict and my dad was an alcoholic. And so my mom and him got together in their like late 20s, early 30s. So my mom had already been very active in her addiction at that point. She was on meth, heroin. She had already lost two of her husbands, one like to a car accident and things like that. And I already had three siblings at that point. So, you know, at that point, they both were at two different points in life, right? So I had a drug addict mom and then an alcoholic dad. So that's, and then I have my siblings, my three siblings directly, but that's pretty much the only family
I have. How would you describe your childhood?
So growing up, probably I was the oldest in the house. So my dad left completely. Like he dropped all of us off in the middle of the desert. He had my mom actually close down here to Santa Monica. They had me. And so they moved out to the base out in Joshua Tree. And when they moved out there, he bought a property and said he was going to rebuild it, but never rebuilt it. Kind of like structured it. It's like a stick house, basically, still. So that was like 10, 15 years ago, right? So promised and promised that he was going to move her down there, get her a house, buy her a house, build her that like white picket fence type of deal. And my mom, like I said, she was an addict. So she was yearning and searching for that like stability. And at that point, she kind of like, I felt like she took her chances. Like, oh, if it happens, great. And if not, then oh, well, like I've already failed so much or there's so much failure. Like, what's the difference? So that didn't happen. We got moved out there and we got moved into this shit house. And at that point, like I said, he just often left. Like he dropped us off. He went wherever. He went to different countries like Italy, Russia, Germany, like with his brother did the same thing. My dad has a twin brother. So at that point, you know, growing up, I went to public school. My mom tried her best to keep me consistent with public school, which for the first couple of years was fine. She did great. But in probably like third or fourth grade, there was like one vehicle at that point and my dad would need my mom to take him back and forth to work. So I started missing school and we would start asking like the teachers to if I could be dropped off at like 6 o'clock in the morning rather than like 7 or 8 when normal school would start, because if not, I couldn't go to school. So at that point, I was so smart. I was in GATE. I was in third grade. I had the reading level of a 6th to 8th grader, and I was reading. I loved reading. It was one of my escapes at home. So to me, school was like, I didn't want that taken away per se. So I was really bummed out about that. But at that point, my mom was on a bunch of pain management. She had spinal stenosis, bleeding kidneys, fibromyalgia or whatever, like a bunch of stuff, right? Then we found out she had cancer in her stomach. She had girl cancer, like ovarian cancer. She was just very sick. So like I said, she tried her best, but she kept getting pregnant. And so I had two siblings that had severe autism, neurological problems, like all these things. So my two little siblings, you know, well, I had three, but my twin sister, she doesn't have any disabilities. So my two younger ones, they're pretty severely disabled. So, you know, at that point, my main focus was not even me going to school. It's that I want my sister to go to school. I want them to go to school. And what are we going to do to keep kind of like consistency going? So at that point, after, you know, we lost the car, we lost everything, and my dad kind of just dipped off to like Mexico or wherever he went for years, 2 years or so, he left. And we couldn't get a hold of him. I tried to call everybody, my grandparents would tell me to stop calling. I would get international calling to try to call his number, see if it worked. It didn't work. So one time, this is kind of what got me into, I guess, like, prostitution or the game per se, is I was probably in, like, fifth or sixth grade, and our lights went out. And we kept trying to call, because usually he would put $200 to $500 a week on the card and leave it at that, and it stopped. So when the money stops, and my mom also, back in the early 2000s, welfare was very strict where I lived, and it still is very strict. But if you're married or if you have a spouse, like on paper, they tell you to go to a domestic violence shelter, kind of like uproot yourself. And at that point, my mom didn't want to do that because we still had the house. We still had things like that. So I don't know what in me from a young age, but I kind of like would see problems and try to fix them. So when the lights went off, we had no phone, we had no anything, because our home phone was connected to the, I guess, the electric or whatever. I don't even remember how home phones work, because I've had a cell phone for the last, like, you know, I'm 24, so probably like 15 years for sake. I've had a cell phone since I was 9, the little track phones. So I walked over to the neighbors. And when I walked over to the neighbors, my mom was on, like I said, a lot of drugs. So pain management per se, she would drink. So when shit got rough, it wasn't like I had a mom that went out and like try to find resources or like try to fix things. It was that it crumbled. And if nobody fixed it, she would just kind of like let it fail. So, and wait for my dad to come back. And when my dad didn't come back, there was no solution. So I went over to the next door neighbors, like I said, and there's a little house up on our hill, probably like a 5-minute walk. So I left my siblings, I left my mom. My mom was sleeping. And when I went over there, I asked the neighbor, hey, do you have a phone? My power's off. Like, I don't know what's going on. And I'm probably like 10 or 11 at this point, okay? So I'm asking, and he's disabled. I don't know why, but for like a lot of where I live, there's a lot of like disabled or a lot of retired or just there's a lot of cheap properties out there. So people just like kind of put themselves up and relax out there. So I went up there and I asked him if he had a cell phone. I called Edison and I'm giving him my address, and I'm asking like, oh, is it a power outage? Like, is it going to come back on? And they're telling me, well, no, can you have an adult call? Because it's your bill's due, like it's cut off. So now Edison, nowadays, they'll let you go for a long time and they'll take liens out on your house. Back then, they would shut it off kind of like immediately. And I don't know how far gone it was at that point, but you know, I'm sitting there and I'm trying to figure things out, and this old man told me, well, you know, I can help you get your power back on. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, how are you gonna do that? My mom's down at the hill. How are you gonna do that? Because my dad's gone. I don't know, what are you gonna do? So then he's telling me, oh, well, you know, I have some money, I have disability, do you know, what do you need? We could figure out something. What do you need? So I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, obviously I need my power on. So what can I do? So I had dealt with situations before where my best friend passed away when I was 11. Her mom prostituted her out. And she lived with me from probably like 4 years old. When I was in preschool, we met in preschool, from 4 years old up until sixth grade. She lived with me consistently. And her mom was also a drug addict, and her dad was alcoholic also. So she would go and visit her mom. Her mom lied and said she had cancer. So her mom was in like Oklahoma or so. She flew out there, told me she was gonna come back, yada yada. And she didn't come back. Her mom overdosed her. Every time she would prostitute her out, she would overdose her on whatever meth or whatever medication she had, and take her to the hospital, say she got into the drugs. And I'm sure she had multiple CPS cases open at that point, but they never took her, never anything. So one summer, I'm waiting for her to come back. Seventh grade is supposed to start, and we get a call that she died. And, you know, nobody told me that she was being prostituted or overdosed until I was a little bit older, probably like 13, 14. But so at that point, her brother, when he was over, he would touch us. So he would make us kiss, and we would go to like the drive-in, and we would go do things. My parents would take us to do things. And when we would go to the drive-in, we would have like blankets and pillows and stuff. And he would put the blankets in the back of us, and he would have my best friend on one side, his sister, his blessed sister. And then he would have me on the other side, and he would, you know, finger us and like do things like that, like make us kiss when we were out playing at his house, if we were to go to his grandma's house, which was very rare because my mom knew of the situation. But sometimes she she would try to give grace and let us go have like a change of scenery, and it was not a good change in scenery. We were doing shit like that.
How old was he?
Probably like 3 or 4 years older than me. So probably like we were little. So I was probably like 7 and he was probably like 11, 12. So, but I knew that his mom and dad were doing it to him too. So that's where it all stemmed from, was his parents were touching him and we got high and things like that. And then he thought it was okay to touch us. So, at that point it wasn't new to me doing sex, like, 'cause I was getting touched on anyways. So in my head, when he was telling me, oh, there's money, and then he's talking about, oh, there's, you know,
disabled guy,
a benefit, yeah. And my electric, I'm correlating the two, and I'm like, you know what, at this point, what do I have to lose? Like, there's a benefit at this point. Like, it's not just like, you know, him where he's touching us, and it's kind of like that. I'm like, at least I'll get my power back on. So we did whatever. A couple hours later, probably like 7, 8 p.m., I go back home. And in the desert where I live, it's the light time at that point. So he made sure to send me home before it went dark. And I came back home and my lights were on. And my mom did not question anything. She did not think. I think she thought it was my dad or something.
And so this happened. You were how old?
Probably like 10 or 11.
10 or 11.
At that point. So.
And you spent a couple hours with this.
Oh, yeah. And my mom was not out all the time, though.
Like, how old was this guy?
Probably like 50s or 60s.
And disabled?
Yeah. And so, but he seemed a little mentally disabled also. So that's where it was kind of like, at that point, I think he knew that I was in a vulnerable, obvious stage. And
what kind of things were you doing with him?
Oh, everything.
Everything?
I'm like, when I was young, I did raw everything. So when I first started out prostituting, I did not know about condoms. I knew about condoms, but in my head, I did not think to use.
Were you getting pregnant?
No, not until I was 15. When I was 15, I got pregnant my first time, and that was by a trick. And then I obviously had an abortion, which I don't even know how I didn't catch anything. Like, I get tested now that I'm consistently doing things like that. I get tested every 2 to 4 weeks, and I'm constantly on doxycycline or whatever if there is an accident, because I work a lot of massage parlors, and a lot of massage parlors are where the most assaults happen. I feel like the massage parlors are, when I am independent and I'm working out on like the streets or like I'm doing like my online stuff, I vet my customers, and if I get a weird feeling, I say no and things like that. But with like massage parlors and things like that, you have to take the customers.
What is the difference between working a massage parlor and working the street?
So massage parlors, the Chinese run massage parlors. So the Chinese have cameras in the stuff, and they'll watch you the whole time. They watch all the girls, and they'll tell the girls, like, when a customer comes in, like, a customer will text the ad, right? And he'll say, oh, what girls do you have today? And they'll text back pictures, and they'll tell the girls, and they'll tell the ethnicities. And then they'll tell them, come in, come in. So I have a thing where I don't see certain customers. Like, if I feel you're on drugs, or if I feel like you're going to give me a hassle or things like that, like, I won't see you. So in the massage parlors, if you deny somebody, you'll lose your job. Like, they'll tell you to go home, and they'll say, oh, there's other girls that will be more grateful for your position. When you're out on the streets, when people come up to me, like in cars, I vet them too. It's like, I don't really jump into cars like right off the bat. Like, I have to really see if I feel comfortable with you and then jump in the car. But even then, when we're in the car, I'll kind of like be one hand on the door, because I'm trying to see what the vibe is of the person. You know what I mean? So it's kind of hard to vet people sometimes, because you never know what really their true intentions are anyways when coming in with dealing with sex transactions, period. A lot of them have like different intentions, or like want to take advantage in some way, if that makes sense. I've met the most best tricks per se that I've met are always online. That's why I don't really like, I work the streets when it's very slow, or if I'm in a city where I'm traveling and it's like I'm doing both. Cause I love the streets during the summer. During the summer, it's very fun. There's a lot of people with a lot of money, a lot of tourists, and this is new to them. But during like normal times of the season, it's a very complex game, because it's a lot of regulars and a lot of people that know how to try to be vindictive or harmful to girls on the street or in the massage parlors. There's a lot of girls that get murdered in the massage parlors. They get murdered. We get robbed. We've had customers come to massage parlors, and they'll bring in devices that restrict our cellular like data from being able to call the police. So when they do that, they throw in tear gas bombs. And when they throw in tear gas, they think that we carry money at the massage parlors. But the thing is they don't. Nobody does. There's people that will pick up the money or get the money. So when they're robbing these places, they're really not doing anything because we don't carry stuff. So it's, like I said, it's just, I don't like to work in the massage parlors because it's a lot more dangerous with robbery and assault. And then, like I said, that's where I've had most of my like sexual assaults, where like dudes will like get us in the room and lock the door or like whatever, or they'll start like doing things like taking off the condom in the middle of the services. Or like I've had an issue where I've told a customer multiple times, like I'll tell my rules before and I say, hey, I don't do bear, I don't do anything like that. So, you know, and I'm what we call a condom holder. So it's like when I'm doing it, I hold on to it because of situations like that. And so I tell them, if you don't want that, then go find another girl or I won't service you because I'm not budging on that because of situations like that. So I've had issues where I was in the parlor and he came in and he's asking me for bear. I said, no. You know, if you don't want that, then go to the other girl. I'm sure there's girls in the massage parlor that will do bear. They do bear everything, bear blowjob, bear this, bear that. So when they went in, you know, he corners me in on the bed and I tell him like, okay, well, we're only doing this position. I charge extra for positions. I charge extra for everything. In the massage parlor, you have to give a lot of your money to the owners. So it's, you try to like not upcharge, but you try to get as much as you can because you have to pay to sleep there. You have to pay for sometimes food. They'll charge you for food. You have to pay for the massage room. So every person that comes in the massage parlor, when you're independent, you don't have to pay anything except your hotel and like whatever you're buying or paying for yourself. The massage parlor, you have to pay for the massages, like give them the money for that. You have to pay to sleep there. You have to pay for food. You have to pay to shower there. You have to pay for everything. So you try to get as much as you can. So the dude, you know, we're doing it and he, in the middle of doing it, he takes off the condom and I'm sitting there trying to push him off. And he's, you know, it doesn't really happen like that when I'm independent. Like I said, I've never had situations like that until I hit the massage parlor, even when I was younger. So when I was younger, I started hitting Figueroa and I started hitting all of that. I was 14 when I first hit Figueroa. And that was because one of my guy friends that when I got expelled from school and for fighting. And so when I got expelled, I started hopping around because my parents didn't want me home. My mom didn't want me home. My dad was gone. And every time my dad did show up at that point, my dad was showing up a bit more, like once every couple of months. But my dad was a severe alcoholic. So it wasn't like, oh, dad's home and like things are great. It's like when I was in school, my dad would like throw cold water on me like in the morning, like if I didn't get up on time, like let's say I'm like 10 minutes late, something like that, or like I don't feel good, then my dad would come in and throw cold water on me or whatever he had to do. So once he started doing that and things like that, I started separating myself because he would cut my heater cords during our house wasn't built, like I said. So you know, I would be sitting there in the cold. We would be cold and I'd have heaters. He'd cut my heater cords. He'd throw away my makeup. He'd throw away my clothes. He was just a weird alcoholic that had like weird control issues. So I would pack up my little five things that I had and I went over to my friend's house and my friend started, her mom did Airbnb cleaning. So when we started the Airbnb cleaning, she let me stay. Her mom was on drugs too, but like real meth, like active meth all the time. So her mom didn't really care that I stayed, but her dad was a creep too, because her dad would tell me all the time, there's three girls staying in my house, me, my friend, and his mom. And he'd be like, I'm not fucking any of you guys. So at this point, like, one of you guys is going to have to do something. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing anything. And that's your daughter and that's your ex-wife. So I'm like, you better go find something else, dude, because I'm only staying here until I can get out. You know what I mean? So I started telling the mom, oh, let me clean Airbnbs with you. I'll pick it up. Like, you could just do whatever, sit there, just like, whatever, just give me whatever you can. Because I wanted to start making some money to get a car. And my city was so, like, little that they didn't really care about, like, little kids driving cars, per se. So I was, like, 13, 14, trying to get my own car. And when I first started getting my own car, that's when I also started prostituting, like started doing service trades or things like that. So with that, me and my friend were, I had like probably like $200-$300 to my name. And I had been Airbnb cleaning for probably like 4 or 5 months at that point. And I would get $40 a week, okay? So I would take $20, put $20 away, and I would take $20 and get food because I was living off peanut butter sandwiches. I don't like jelly. Jelly is very weird to me. Like, I don't know why. It's like a texture thing. So I would live off of, like, peanut butter sandwiches. And so I would go down to the little Santana's down the street, and I would go get a burrito, like, whenever I would get my 40 bucks. So once I started collecting like a couple hundred, which I said like 200, I hit like 200, and I'm scrolling Craigslist. And back then, Craigslist, you could get, the economy was great. The economy was, you could get shit for so cheap. So I found a little, I think it was like a Cadillac. Now that I'm like older and I know cars, it was a red velvet, had red velvet inside, very classic outside, and it was a paraplegic. And that's why I said, I don't know why, but I feel like I've always been like a safe spot for like disabled people because I had disabled siblings growing up. So I was dealing with that anyways. And so I met him, me and my friend and my other little guy friend. We drove down there in her mom's car, right? And so she's like, okay, Story's going to go get a car. We'll be back in a little bit. So we get down there. And so I tell her, I'm like, okay, well, just drop me off. I'm going to see if I want it anyways. Meet me over at the gas station. Like, there was a gas station like 5 minutes away. And I love like Palm Springs, like where we were at. That's where we went to go get the car. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just meet you over there in a minute. So me and the dude are talking. He's telling me about the car. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm telling him about my backstory. He's telling me about how he's a veteran, and that's why he's a paraplegic, because some stuff with the military or something like that, and he got injured. So, you know, and I'm telling him, yeah, well, I'm going through a tough time. Like, right now I'm staying at my friend's house, and, you know, I'm trying to get my permit, because he's like, how old are you? You look like 12. And I really looked really young at that point. I did not know how to do my makeup. I had just left my emo stage. Like, I was self-harming a lot at that point, like cutting myself before I left home to deal with everything that was at home. So it was like, I did not look like some 16 to 18 year old that should have a car. So he's like, oh, how old are you? And I'm like, you know, 14. But I'm like, it's okay. Like, I have somebody else with me that'll drive and da 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 da. So he's like, you only have $200 to, like, that's it? And I'm like, yeah, because he listed it for about $500. But I told him, hey, if you'll take it for $200, my friend says she'll put $50 on top of it. So I'll give you half, like half cash. I'll come pick it up now. I really need a car. So at that point, I'm telling my friend, I'm like, okay, well, he's going to take it for $250. Like, I'm like, don't even worry about that. So just like get the $50 from the ATM, tell your mom, I'll pay her back or advance, whatever I have to do. So, when he was filling out the paperwork, I told him, I knew at that point how to maneuver my game. That wasn't the first time that I had done something like that. So I told him, I'm like, you know, how long has it been since you've been with a woman? You don't have a wife or anything like that? And he's like, no, you know, ever since I got injured and, you know, I've been staying at home. I just stay at home all the time. He's like, that's why I'm selling my car. He's like, I get rides from the state, like from the I guess like Medi-Cal or like whatever the state will do, like things for people that can't drive. So, he was telling me like, oh, I don't need a car anymore. So that's why I'm saying like, you know, it's somebody's come up. And so I'm like, okay, so do you like to have fun? Like, do you like to drink? Like, what do you like to do? And then he's like, yeah, I like to drink, but no, I don't party or anything like that. Like, why? You like to party? He's like, I'm not the one if you want to party. And I'm like, well, I don't want to party, but I'm like, you know, maybe you and I can like for the remainder or something like that, like figure out like a deal. And so he's like, no, it's okay. Like, cause I told him I was gonna pay him back. Like the $250, I told him I was gonna send it or meet him or whatever. Like, just give me a couple weeks and let me get some money put together. Cause I was working on a really, really fixed income for my age. So he told me, I figured he was probably gonna let me go away with it anyways and probably not hound me. But I guess I was just like hypersexual at that point and just like felt like I needed to do it. So I told him, I'm like, well, I'll trade you. Like, you know, we can do like a couple minutes, like probably like 30 minutes. My friends are out doing stuff and stuff like that. And, you know, that way you don't have to worry about the remainder and I can, you know, have a car. So he's like, no, it's okay. Like, you could just come back. And at that point, like I said, I think I was just hypersexual because I started touching on him. And then at that point, it wasn't really a thing. I didn't use condoms. I didn't do anything like that. So push came to shove, we did a couple of minutes, and my friend's blowing me up, and she's asking me what's going on, because my mom needs the car, and da-da-da-da, and my dad's tripping, are we going home, and so-and-so, because, like I said, we have my guy friend. So we were like a little trio. We went everywhere together. Like, he was homeless. His mom was a drug addict. Her mom was a drug addict, and my mom was a drug addict. So it was like we were just best friends. So at that point, I told her, I'm like, well, you could come now. I'm fine. So I came. We got the car. So-and-so, he drove the mom's car, and she was driving my car because I was too scared to drive it. If we got pulled over, I'm still to this day too scared of getting in trouble legally. That's why I'm so, like, slick with everything that I do, because I don't want I don't want a history with this. This is just my stepping stone. Like,
What do you want to be doing?
So I have an AA in psychology. And yeah, and so I'm all over the place right now. I was gonna be a substance abuse counselor because my mom killed herself from substance abuse. So that hits close to home, and there's no resources ever. Like in my city, if you're homeless, it's kind of like a you're fucked type deal. There's people that die from heat stroke all the time. And like when I come down to LA and I'm working and I'm out on the streets and everywhere I go, I used to work E14 up in the Bay. I would walk over there. I would walk over in AZ everywhere. I walk everywhere, Colorado. And you know,
you've been doing this for how many years?
Since I was 12.
And you're how old now?
24. So I'm like, you know, at this point.
How has the industry changed since you started?
Oh, dramatically. That's why my whole goal is to get out.
How have things changed?
First off, the economy was way different. Tricking way back when, like that's my tricks started off so different. Even when I was freshly 18 and started out like with clubs and things like that, you didn't have to do too much. Like you could get more for less, and it was very comfortable. Like my customers were my friends. Like we would go out on trips, they would take me shopping, we would, you know, it wasn't like a boyfriend experiencing. I never did anything, you know. After I learned the game, which I have a rule where when you're in survival and you don't know the game per se and you don't know the rules, you get an excuse or a pass, because I wasn't just like brought into the game by like somebody or to where I knew the rules of like, you can't do bear, you can't do this, you can't do that. It was, I had to do it or else we were going to lose my house, and I didn't want to be homeless. And when you're 11, 12 years old and your lights are off and you're in the middle of the desert and your mom's not out and there is no solution. If you're not the solution, I had to be the solution. So it, you know, okay, I didn't know the game per se, but once I knew not to do BFE per se, I've touched a lot of money, and I never ever boast about that ever. But being realistic, in my whole time of doing this, I probably touched at least 500,000, at least, even within the last couple of years, like the past recent 3 to 4 years that I've been in and out of the massage parlors, that I've been out of, in and out of the street, bumping my ads, like getting my ad game up and things like that, working Instagram. I work everything.
Do you have a pimp?
No, never in my life. I've been a renegade.
Where's the money go?
To myself, to my college. I paid for college all with cash.
Oh, you did?
And yeah, and so I'm in right now college again to get my bachelor's in psychology.
Wow.
But, and I'm also trying to open up a nonprofit this year by the end of the year for the homeless and substance abuse and mental health and things like that in my city. So I have a very good plan for all of my money.
So you're gonna be a psychologist with face tattoos?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like everybody trusts me and feels more comfortable with me because of all the shit that, like, my mom always taught me. So my mom was like a punk, like she was Russian, but kind of like a Russian punk. It was really funny because she had mohawks. I had a mohawk when I was little. Like I said, I was emo. So growing up, it was never you had to censor yourself. You had to like be a certain way. It was you are who you are, and whoever accepts you, and you just be you. So I started getting all these face tats. I was in a really bad abusive relationship, and he tried to kill. I have two kids, so he tried to kill me and my kids, and he went to prison for 4 years for it. And during that period,
four years for attempted murder.
No, so he just got mayhem because he disabled my hand. He bit my hand open and severed my tendons, my C7 and C8 nerves. And so what had happened was that night I worked a lot. I did sex work the whole time we were together. He would set me up on dates. Well, I would set up dates and I would write the license plate down. He would watch me go, whatever, whatever. He was lazy. And to me, it wasn't anything different because my dad was such a loser already that having a baby dad that didn't care that I did that or like I had to do that. It was just a continuous thing, right? So, I was with a 30-year-old before I got with him. When I was 13, I was with a 30-year-old, and he ended up overdosing and passing. And after that, like, I got with my baby dad. I was, like I said, I was always searching for male attention, always. I had no attention at home. I had no mom attention. I had no dad attention. I had nothing. And in my head, negative attention was way better than no attention because at least I was being paid attention to. So at that point, you know, my dad was abusive. My dad would beat the shit out of me all the time. Like, he would get drunk, and there was one time he would beat on my mom, and I would just get tired of it. And I'd be like, why do you keep beating on her? He broke her nose. He punched her in her face. Her whole eye was black and purple, like all her face up here. When she was pregnant, he would beat on her. You know, we would call the cops. The cops are very where I live. Like, they were on the male side, per se. So they would always say, like, what did she do? And I would be sitting there telling them, like, I watched him beat her ass. Like, what do you mean? What did she do? My mom would nag, per se, but it's more of like, why are you cheating? Why are you leaving me? Why are my bills not paid? Why are my kids not getting the shit that they need and things like that? And he just didn't want to deal with it. So he would drink, and then he would just get so tired of it, and he would beat on all of us. So one time I got so tired of it, he was beating on all of us, and he dragged me from one side of the house all the way through the house to the bedroom, and he was beating on me in the corner. So finally my mom pulled him off. They were in the kitchen, whatever. So I locked myself in the bathroom. And the way that my dad built the bathroom was that the toilet was like right direct in front of the door, right? So I put my little body and I'm pushing my legs up against the toilet and putting my back up against the door so he couldn't get in. He broke that door, broke it in, grabbed me, put me into the bathtub, and just started beating the shit out of me, hitting my head up on the faucet, hitting my head on the wall, hitting my head everywhere. When I was pregnant, and like I said, I was in the abusive relationship, I was like 2 months pregnant. My baby dad would beat on me too. He beat the shit out of me in a Sam's Club parking lot in front of...
How are all these experiences that you're enduring?
I've never processed them at that point.
Well, then, but you're trying to be a psychologist.
Yeah, well, at that point, I didn't process it.
No,
now,
but everything you've been through,
yeah.
How is that going to make you a better psychologist, or will it make you a better psychologist?
I feel like I'm able to relate to everybody and help everybody because of all the shit that I've been through.
Yeah,
like
I can see that.
I've touched everybody. Currently, I have a next door neighbor, right? She's a schizophrenic. She's like probably in her 60s or 70s. She's schizophrenic and is very incoherent, and she's got a disabled sister also. And her caretaker is committing IHSS fraud, and she'll run out naked all the time. Like yesterday, for Mother's Day, I spent it with the police, and she jumped in our pool but naked and was running into town naked. I was running barefoot trying to chase her. I had to tackle her and try to wrap her up with a blanket and things like that. It's been a mess, but things like that, my neighbors literally all call me. I was 1 foot into the shower getting ready for my day, and my neighbor calls me. She's in the pool naked. So I go out there, and I'm fucking like, dude, it's Mother's Day. Like, come on, babe, give me a break. But I don't mind. I love her. My mom had dementia from the alcohol and the pill use. So her frontal lobe completely died. My mom was falling, and she was like, incoherent all the time. Like, my mom would repeat things like obsessively, and I don't think it was echolali. Maybe I feel like echolali goes hand in hand with dementia and Alzheimer's because they're constantly repeating things that have happened to them or experiences that really mean a lot to them. So with she has the same thing. The elderly has the same thing. So she's constantly, she has a form of dementia. So anyways, I take care of her. I take care of all the kids in my neighborhood. All the kids come over to my house all the time.
Your kids are where?
With me.
With you.
Yeah. I've never had any issues with my children. I've always taken care of my children. I pay very expensive, you know, rates for childcare. I make sure my kids are very taken care of before I do anything. I'm not the type of mom where this is my lifestyle and then my kids. It's my kids are my priority, and I'm in this lifestyle because of my children. And because of, I didn't have a mom and dad. I had no childcare. My baby dad tried to kill me. And when he tried to kill me, it was either I chose him or my children, or I was going to lose my children. I'm not losing my children. My mom had already died at that point, and I'm not losing the two most important things I had to me. Like, those are my life. So I found, you know, friends, and I found different babysitters that, you know, would different periods. My children are always constantly, like, changing childcare because I'm kind of picky and things like that. But if I don't, that's why I haven't been on tour, per se, for so long, because I've been at home working from home because I don't feel comfortable with the childcare that I had. So I'm waiting until I find somebody and things like that. And then I'm going to go on tour in the next month or so. And
when you say go on tour, you go where?
Anywhere. Right now I want to go up to New York. That's going to be my first time going up to New York, but I have a really good trick up there that wants to fly me out. And I have, like, when I'm bumping my ad, I have good hits out there. So I want to go to the East Coast, per se. But I go anywhere, just wherever my stuff's, like, bumping. But with the economy right now, that's also why I've been at home. I make more off of content and from being a content creator than I do working out right now. Like, you have to remember, you're paying gas fees, travel fees, flight fees, hotel fees, everything. If you add all that up, your food, your this, your that, you add all of that up, you're not making that much, or if it's slow, per se.
And the interactions with all the dudes is probably not.
It's, yeah, and that's what I'm saying.
It's the toughest part of the job.
That I don't have the risks either. So I'm not sitting there risking, like, oh, is he going to try to take off the condom? Is he going to try to rob me? Is he going to this? When people find out I'm Russian, so I've had a lot of Russian customers. So Russian customers will sit there and they tell me, like, you're going to hell. Like, you're like, oh, they, it's a very disrespectful thing in the culture to do any type of sex work. If you're Turkish, Persian, or not Persian, what is it? So Turkish, Russian, Armenian, anything like that. You are not supposed to do any type of sex work. So if they find out that that's really your ethnicity, they shame you, or they'll try to take advantage of you or be really, like, vindictive. So I had one Russian pick me up off the blade, and it was slow. And this was on Fig, on somebody third. And so he walked up to me.
So the guys are doing it, but they're condemning you for doing it.
Well, that's my point too. And I'm like, dude, you're such a joke, because I think the same thing applies to you exactly. But you know, we go to the room and I tell him, okay, 150 for a quick, and that's, you know, full service, whatever. And so we're doing it, but he's not, I don't touch them if they're not hard. You have to, so what I do, my process of it is, when I get them in the room, I'll sit there and I'll have my outfit on, whatever, right? And I always wear stuff like this, like, always to where they can, like, I could bend over and they could see a peak, or, like, cause I'm lower half heavy, per se. So I twerk really good. So I'll bend over, I'll twerk, I'll start, you know, showing them. And I'm like, they'll start getting hard. Normal dudes, normal tricks, they get hard right away, and I could just slip it on. And I have a thing where if the condom's airy, like, I'll switch it. Like, if the you put the condom on the wrong way, or if I put the condom on the wrong way, I'll switch it. Like, they always try to do some weird shit and try to, like, reuse the condom, or, like, I'm very germophobic. I spray them with alcohol, their hands with alcohol before I wipe them down.
Do you think prostitution or things like that should be legalized?
Oh, absolutely. So we could get the resources we need. So that's also why I'm so big on, like, opening up a, like, nonprofit for sex work, substance abuse, and things like that. Because I go to Planned Parenthood all the time, right? And I preface all my providers. I say, I'm a sex worker, so I'm going to need you to check A, B, C, D, E, and, like, everything. I'm not just a normal person that's going out and having, like, one, two occasional partners, and I'm here getting tested because you don't know I'm a sex worker. So that's why I've taken the precautions with the doxycycline and things like that. I will not do PrEP because of the liver damage that it can do. You have to get your liver tested. And to me, if you're taking the safest precautions and you're screening clients and you're doing things like that, you really shouldn't have to take PrEP and do that to your liver, because the risks are very minimal. That's why I haven't done the massage parlors in so long, because I was getting tired of fucking getting assaulted, like, and having dudes take off the condoms and sit there and try to tell me I have to take less than $100 for sex and things like that. And at that time, I had to, because if not, I was stuck where I was with no money. I was going to lose my job and things like that, and I was tired of it. So I went from massage parlors to independent, and like I said, I made good money independent. Very, very good.
Let me ask you some questions about your life. Did you feel loved when you were a kid?
By my mom, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. She tried her best, but her form of love was, like, she didn't have love, per se. Like, my grandma was a drug addict also. So my grandma got my mom started on drugs when she was 11. And so 11.
So your parents were what nationality?
My mom's Russian. My dad's just white. Just he is a blue collar worker.
Have you been in love before?
Have I been in love? No, never. Now that I know where I'm at in life, and now that I'm so conscious of my feelings and the relationships and experience that I've had, no, I've never loved anybody.
It's really refreshing to hear somebody your age say, "Nope, I've never been in love."
Oh, I
because everybody like, says that every age tells me, "Oh yeah."
Oh no, love. Until you find somebody that loves you so consistently and so thoroughly, like really loves you, has been around for years, sees how you wake up in the morning, how you react to things, what your coping mechanisms are.
They've seen you at your best and your worst.
Yes. Yeah. So heavily, love does not exist. And it's very hard to find that because love comes with a lot of stimulations and a lot of you need to, and I don't have to or need to be anything. I have to or need to be things for myself and for my children. And that's why, you know, I've gotten dealt bad cards per se to society. I don't think they're bad cards. I think that I've gotten so blessed. My mother, when she passed away in 2021, I was pregnant. And like I said, I was in my domestic violence, and my baby dad was beating the crap out of me. And right after her funeral, he beat me up in the pizza parking lot in front of my family. And I was so tired of it. And I said, you know what? Why would God do this to me? Why would he take my mom? Why would he do this to me? Why would he make me go through all this shit? I'm going to be a single mom. What the fuck am I going to do? Like, why is this shit so tough? And the night happened where I was working, like I said, I was working an Airbnb job. I was doing things. He was working his job. My siblings had picture day the next day, right? So I told him, hey, I have to go get the kids' clothes. I have to run to the store. So I'm going to drop our kids off at the house, and you're going to watch them. So he wanted to play his video games, and he did not want to watch the kids. But I told him, well, you know, suck it up, Buttercup. You're going to have to watch them. So I drop them off. I go to the store. I'm getting things like that. And he would bitch about anything. If there was a freaking smudge on the wall, you were the worst person in the world for having a smudge on the wall. My children's father is very, very oddly, like, particular about things for somebody that does nothing, does not clean, does not do anything. So, you know, he's bitching at me the whole time that I'm gone. Hurry up, come watch your kids. I want to relax. I've been working. I told him I just cleaned two houses all day, and I have to go get the kids ready for picture day. Just breathe. Like, give me a couple minutes, and let me go to the store and go get outfits. So I come back. He locked me out. So I'm like, dude, what the fuck is your problem? We lived in like a kind of shitty house. So our house did not have locks on the windows. So I opened up the window and I climbed in through the window. And I said, dude, quit it. Like, you're fucking weird. Like, why are you being like that? So, you know, my kids are very mellow. I love my babies so much because no matter all the bullshit that they've been through, my kids were never, it never made them like bad kids. So, you know, there was a lot of bullshit going on around them, and I regret it so much staying as long as I did. But with everything going on, it was like I didn't want to have to go back into sex work consistently. It's like when you see that there's a white picket fence vision, and your mom's always taught you like that's the goal. Like, you try to put up with any abuse, anything just to get through that, just to have that for your kids. And so I was trying to do whatever I could to do that for my kids because I couldn't do it by myself. I had no confidence in myself. I didn't know who I was. I had no interest. I didn't know anything. So we're getting into arguments, you know, whatever. He's bitching about dinner, whatever. He's drunk as shit. And I don't even know how this came about, but he would just block me, stop talking to me for like hours. And it was when he wanted to talk to me, when he needed something, he would start talking to me again. And my trauma response, since that happened so much as a child with my parents, I would get really upset really fast, and I'd be like, come on, like, please don't be mad at me. Like, I'm so sorry. Like, whatever I can do to, you know, make it better, like, I'll make it better. I apologize, whatever. And he would just tell me, like, shut the fuck up. Like, whatever. Would start throwing shit at me, would start like getting in my face, telling me like, you know, shut the fuck up. I told you, shut the fuck up. So even with him getting physical, I don't know why I didn't stop, but something in me was like, oh, that's your partner. Like, you can love him through that, or get him, like, stop him from being angry with something. So I would try to find, like, the magic something. There was no magic something. He's fucked up.
Let me ask you one last question. What would you say is the most helpful thing you've learned from all your years interacting with all these kind of characters, especially doing sex work, that you can use in your psychology?
now I can teach everybody now how not to be in survival mode, that there is no survival mode. Like, it's just a trauma response. I think as a child, we get taught so many things, and that's why we end up in situations like that. And when we end up in situations like that, it's normal for us to continue it because it's comfort. We're comfortable. And for a lot of people, like sex workers and a lot of abuse survivors, a lot of whatever you are, you try to find comfort in a lot of things, so you'll stay stagnant. And we can't do that. You can't do that in life, period. You have to be able to be okay with change and take whatever change is happening to you and face on, understand it's not an it may be an inconvenience now, but it's not a long-term inconvenience. There's a thing called a burnt toast effect, and I apply it to everything: finances, mental, physical, everything. If my hair doesn't curl in the morning, then obviously there's a reason my hair wasn't meant to curl. You know, my divine timing said it's not like it's supposed to be like that. You know, it comes with being late, things like that. So sometimes divine timing tells us this is not our place, this is not our time, and we try to pressure it and we try to, you know, make it our divine timing or make it, and it just doesn't work. So I feel like now with me, you know, opening up my nonprofit, me dealing with, I feed the homeless every other week, 2 times a month. I go to different cities and I go bring water, chips, sandwiches. I make stuff at home. Like, I try to be very, very active in my community. So I'm not just sitting here saying that there needs to be a change, but I am the change. And, but now since I've been through all that, I get so much grace and so much peace, and I teach people how to do that. So it's a domino effect. Everybody that I touch and I be with, they do it to other people. And they may or may not, but they'll always remember the way that we all interact with each other. So that everything that I've been through and continuously go through, it doesn't stop. Everything's going to continue. I'm only 24. I've got so much time ahead of me, so I can only imagine what's going to happen. But for now, I just take it day by day, and I just apply it to, like I said, there is no survival mode. We're just all trying to live, and there's no judgment, no anything. Let's just, you know, just try to be as comfortable as we can be.
All right, Story. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
I wish you lots of luck with your future. Thanks.
Yes.